Canadian Consul General Paul Connors is based in Minneapolis. He recently visited South Dakota to meet with Governor Dennis Dugard. We spoke with him last week after that visit. We talked about the role of a consul general, Canada's 150th birthday, and most importantly, the economic partnership between South Dakota farms and businesses and our neighbors to the north.
Yeah, maybe I'll start. Thank you, Laurie. Maybe I'll start with what a consulate general is. Most people know what an embassy is. It's in a capital city, and it's the representative office of a foreign country with a government. The United States has an embassy in Ottawa, of course, our capital, and of course, Canada has an embassy in the United States. And what a consulate or a consulate general is when a relationship is so big between any two countries and you need additional offices, in addition to your embassy, you set up consulates. So the nature of the relationship going back centuries between Canada and the United States is so large and so enormous and so intertwined in so many areas. We have 12 consulate generals throughout the United States, New York, Boston, Miami, Denver, Dallas, San Francisco, L.A., Chicago here, Miami, I think I've missed a few. Mm-hmm. And in the same vein, the United States, the State Department, finds it in its interest to have a consulate general in Vancouver, Calgary, Winnipeg, Toronto, Montreal, Quebec City, and Halifax. And so what are all those bureaucrats doing? Well, what we do here in Minneapolis, we cover five states, South Dakota, of course, your great state, Minnesota, of course, where we're headquarters. And we also cover Canada's relations with North Dakota and Nebraska and Iowa. We're a small but mighty team of 18 people here, 11 women and 7 men. And we primarily work on three things. Our largest work is on the great economic relationship, trade and investment between our two countries. We also head up public policy work. Discussions between the governments on any policy issues. Example there would be border cooperation, the renegotiation of NAFTA, our cooperation internationally on defense and security. And we also do cultural work and public diplomacy, promoting goodwill between the countries. And then the third function here is we have a consular function, which is basically helping out distressed Canadians in the United States when they get into trouble. That's mostly lost passports. It's occasionally a Canadian that gets in trouble with the law here, and we have to assist. And you'll find the U.S. consulates in Canada do exactly the same thing for U.S. citizens.
So how often are you making the trip to South Dakota?
Well, we're out there regularly, and the team makes sure that we get everywhere at least half a dozen times a year. The team has been to South Dakota lots in the last year, mainly on the business development side. And while I was in Pierre last week, we had a discussion with David Owen, the head of your Chamber of Commerce, and we're going to come out and participate in his annual South Dakota Business Day in February. Our agricultural counselor is going to go out next week to a cattleman's group that is being held in Sioux Falls, I believe.
During your meeting with Governor Dennis Dugard last week, then, what was on the agenda? What were the highlights?
Well, I came out, that was my first trip. I've been at the consulate for a year. That was my first trip out in my official capacity, Laurie. I'm happy to tell you about it, but I hope you let me get back to the last time I was in South Dakota, because that was kind of fun.
Okay.
We came out to see Governor Dugard on two reasons. One is this is Canada's sesquicentennial year. That's just a big word, meaning it's our 150th birthday. We're a little younger as a country than the United States is, and I always like to explain that we never teach integrated North American history in our schools. We just teach Canadian history and U.S. history. And by that I mean there were 17 British North American colonies. And in 1776, the 13 to the south decided, hey, Mom, we're out of here. And the United States was born. And the four colonies to the north said, we'll stay with Mom a little longer. So it was about 80 years later in 1867 when Canada became an independent country. So this year was our 150th birthday. We celebrated it quite a bit, a year-long celebration in Canada. The highlight was our National Day on July 1st, but we're continuing to celebrate it till the end of the year. And one of the things we decided to do in the Consulate General here in Minneapolis was to give an official Canada 150 gift to the people of all five states that we have an honor to cover on behalf of Canada. And we did that through paintings by First Nations artists from our prairie provinces, or as you call them, the Great Plains, La Grande Prairie in French. And we gave a piece of art through the governors of each of the states, representing the relationship and the friendship between Canada and South Dakota. So Governor Dugard graciously made himself available last Friday, and we had a chance to present him with a piece of original artwork by a wonderful Canadian First Nations artist named Simone McLeod. Simone is Cree Ojibwe. She was born in Winnipeg, as she's a member of the Pasqua First Nations band in Saskatchewan. And what we really love about her art, if you or your listeners want to Google it, Lori, is that she's so positive. Her paintings are all about finding positivity in yourself to make yourself a better person, and then using that energy to positively build on community. So the two pieces, her two pieces, which we framed into one, which we were happy to give to the people of South Dakota, was strength through hard work and working for tomorrow. We just love the themes of work. We work on ourselves. We work in part of community. Nothing comes free in life. You need to work to achieve things, but we can do this. We love those values, and we pick them because I think they're really representative of the ethic that you find in South Dakota, the ethic that you find in Canada's prairie provinces, and the ethic that have built two of the most successful countries in the world.
Let's talk.
So that was the fun side.
That's the fun side. And then there was a business side, too?
Yes. One of the things we're doing is we're getting out and speaking to everyone about the wonderful economic relationship between Canada and South Dakota and between Canada and the United States. And we're doing that, Lori, as a backdrop to the renegotiation of the NAFTA trade treaty that we have with the United States and Mexico. And the renegotiation is underway. Round five should conclude today in Mexico City. And we'll see where we're at when we get the debrief on that later today. So as to the great economic relationship, if you'll permit me to start with South Dakota. South Dakotans are great manufacturers, great growers of all things agriculture, and you're great exporters, you're great traders. You're number one customer in the world. The country that you export most to is Canada. Number two is Mexico. There's your two NAFTA partners. If we just do the agricultural economy in South Dakota, which of course is a large chunk of your economy, the order reverses. Mexico is your largest trading partner just for agricultural commodities, and number two is Canada. But again, you see your NAFTA trading partners. So NAFTA has been enforced since 1994, and it has just facilitated this wonderful amount of trade between South Dakota and its two main trading partners. South Dakota's trade with Canada is about $1 billion a year. It's roughly 50-50. You've had a slight surplus the last couple of years, but it's roughly in balance. And of course, our trading relation, our economic relationship is more than just the trade. It's also the investment. I did my homework assiduously. Governor Dugard grew up in a dairy farm, so I pointed out that we had a couple of Canadian dairy companies, Saputo and Agripur, that were invested in South Dakota. And then you've got great South Dakota companies that, after years of doing good business in Canada, set up shop as well. And I think you're from Sioux Falls, so you might know Raven Industries. They're up in Canada doing great things in Saskatchewan. We're proud to have them there. And then a fun fact about our trade relationship is that Rosenbauer makes all one of the largest builders of fire trucks in the United States, sells over 100 fire trucks every year to Canada. So we have Rosenbauer fire trucks from South Dakota all over the country. So we have this great trading relationship with South Dakota, and you know, it replicates in our trading relationship with the United States. Lori, Canada is the largest customer in the world for the United States. The United States exports more to Canada than it does to China, Japan, and the United Kingdom combined. It is a humongous trading relationship. Last year, it was almost $2 billion a day, and that over $600 billion a year worth of trade, I'm pleased to say, was not only humongous, it was in balance. You guys had a small $7.7 billion surplus with us, about 1% on the differential. So we just like to call that even. So we have this great trading relationship. It's humongous. It's in balance. And if you break it down a little further, what's interesting about it, there's been some concern by the U.S. administration about manufacturing jobs under the NAFTA. But if you break down the manufacturing figure only, last year the United States had a $36 billion surplus with Canada. And if you're wondering where Canada comes out ahead, that's on energy. Last year, Canada had about a $37 billion surplus with the United States in terms of our energy trade. So we have a great economic relationship going. It's huge, it's balanced, it's fair, and NAFTA makes it all possible. And so as you and your listeners probably know, Laurie, the Trump administration suggested that we do a renegotiation of NAFTA. Canada's approach to the renegotiation was one of optimism. The treaty came into effect on January 1st, 1994, so it's 20-some years old. We think it could need an updating. So we have folks from the three countries going through the chapters and updating them as we speak. There are things that we didn't think of back in the early 90s when we negotiated NAFTA. The thing that comes to mind for me is electronic commerce and everything we do online. So we like to think that updating NAFTA and building on it and making it better is a good idea, and that's our goal in the negotiation.
How should South Dakotans, as we watch the negotiations and get the updates through the news reports, how should we think about those NAFTA negotiations? Because round five doesn't seem like it's going particularly well. It's been arduous. You know, there are certain things the United States has on the table that people are saying are unacceptable. How should we sort of process this and see long term how these negotiations are playing out?
Well, our ask, Laurie, that's a very good point. And our ask, because NAFTA is so important to all three countries and has provided such wonderful benefits to all three countries. So our ask to people, which was my ask to Governor Dugard, and it was my ask to your Chamber of Commerce and some of the other folks that I met with, was please stay engaged and please continue to follow these negotiations and please speak out in terms of what is in your best interest, and we're certainly going to do that as Canada. As our foreign minister said at the end of round four a few weeks back, the U.S. Trade Representative put a few proposals on the table that in their original form as presented were troubling for Canada. And they were troubling because everything that we're trying to achieve in the update is to build on NAFTA and make it new and improved, as we say in marketing. And a couple of the proposals as presented struck us as taking away from what we've already achieved in NAFTA. To give you an example, the NAFTA, as all trade treaties, already has an exit mechanism. Any party can give a six-month notice if they want to pull out of it. So that already exists in the NAFTA. And in round four, we had a proposal that said all parties must proactively renew the treaty every 5 years for it to remain in force. And I've got to tell you, Laurie, we scratch our head on that one in Canada because we say, well, there's already an exit mechanism that the parties can access. So how are we making this bigger and better by requiring it that it be proactively renewed every 3 years by all three parties? And it strikes us that you're maybe opening a can of worms to undercutting the NAFTA because you'd be undercutting the business confidence of assuring that you have the treaty in place for an extended period of time. Business cycles and investments and integrating supply chains for manufacturers, you want to be assured a little bit more than in 5 years increments. So that is part of our outreach to South Dakota. In last week is to please stay engaged, please be aware, and please speak out. I'm pleased to report that it's an easy sell in South Dakota. And what I mean by that is yours is a state that understands the concept of trading and exports and growing wealth and integrated supply chains. Your congressional delegation, Senator Thune, Senator Rounds, and Representative Noem, are generally very good proponents of free and fair trade with Canada and Mexico and with other jurisdictions. And indeed, we found that environment with the governor, and we were reassured by that. And we were reassured that what South Dakotans want to see is a new and improved, bigger and better NAFTA emerge. I would be remiss, Lori, in pointing out the concerns that we have at the moment if I also didn't point out that Vice President Mike Pence gave a wonderful public remarks in August where he said exactly that same thing, that what the United States wants to see is a new and improved win-win-win, was his words, on NAFTA. So there are a couple dark clouds on the horizon that are causing us concern that we want to point out to folks that are also following this negotiation and also want to build on the great relationship we have. And we are convinced that if we stick to our original objective and goal of making this new and improved, we can get there.
Canadian Consul General Paul Connors, I spoke with him last week. We'll have more of that conversation during our next hour. Welcome back to In the Moment. Last week, we spoke with Canadian Consul General Paul Connors. We brought you the first part of that conversation last hour. We'd like to offer the rest of it to you now. During this segment, we discuss some of the challenges facing NAFTA negotiations, issues surrounding dairy exports and soft lumber, always contentious topics in trade. Plus, we dove into safety concerns regarding oil pipelines, as well as whether or not more stringent climate policies in Canada impact the path of the Keystone XL pipeline. Connor says they don't. Here's more now with Canadian Consul General Paul Connors. During the beginning of the negotiations, President Trump was quoted as saying that Canada has outsmarted our politicians for many years. So what's your message to, you know, South Dakotans as you are telling us, you know, this is a fair and equitable agreement? Our president is saying, not so fast. There's some things that Canada has been getting away with that we want to bring back to the table and have a more challenging negotiation. What's your message on that?
Well, again, I would point to some facts. Look how big that trading relationship is with Canada. It's in balance, and indeed you have a slight surplus with us. So that's wonderful news. The concern, as I've heard it expressed by the president, is about the manufacturing sector in particular and manufacturing jobs being destroyed under the treaty. Well, I would ask you to look at that. Again, if you look at the figures with Canada, last year you had a $36 billion surplus with us on just the manufacturing sector. So we all understand negotiations. We all understand good cop, bad cop. And so I guess my response would be, well, let's look at the facts. And I think the facts will show you that NAFTA is a really good treaty. It's been really good for all three of us. And it also behooves us then, if we're looking at the facts, to work towards a win-win-win, to quote Vice President Pence, of making it better.
Is there a way to incorporate better protections for American manufacturing jobs or wages and unions in the United States to address some of those challenges?
Yeah, those challenges are being discussed. I'm not one of the negotiators, obviously. Canada has also suggested, could we also look at ways of increasing environmental protections? Could we also find ways to incorporate better our First Nations, Native Americans, I think is the vernacular here in the United States. We also have a big priority in Canada on gender equality and looking at things from a gender perspective. So we've suggested, our negotiators have suggested, could we look at things there? So I think with goodwill, I think I would like to underline the point about goodwill. Mm-hmm. I think if the negotiators from all three countries bring their ideas together on how in all of these areas, including labor, including the manufacturing sector that you cited, Lori, I think if we can do that, bright minds can come up with a new and improved NAFTA.
You mentioned a conversation with Governor Dugard about dairy and trade in that industry. That and lumber seems to be one of those things that's always somewhat contentious between Canada and the United States. Talk a little bit to our dairy farmers here in South Dakota. And what do you have to say to them? How have we made improvements between those relationships?
Yeah, I guess I would say a couple things. I'm always a little reticent to talk about the very few tiny areas that we disagree with without mentioning that $2 billion relationship that goes on day in, day out between our countries, 99.9% of it problem-free. There's never a mention in the press because there doesn't need to be. I'll start with softwood lumber. That is a trade dispute between our country that has been going on for over a century. I suspect it'll go on for a long time to come. Basically, what we've always done there is two things. We've agreed to disagree on our views of the levels of support that are provided in different countries for the industry. And so what we've always managed to do is come up with a managed trade agreement for the sector. From time to time, they expire, and we're back into a negotiation. That's what we're into right now on the softwood lumber. Negotiations continue on. We've not reached a new agreement yet. But again, if we go back to the principle of goodwill, I think if the U.S. side and the Canadian side put their head together and keep working the issues, they will get there. To your dairy farmers, the wonderful dairy farmers of South Dakota, I hope you heard me earlier in the interview when I pointed out that Agropur and Saputa are two Canadian dairy firms heavily invested in South Dakota, doing wonderful business in the state, employing South Dakotans there. What I would ask you to do on dairy is to remember that both countries in the ag sector, we have supply management in Canada. You have different support programs for farmers in the United States. These support programs that we have are all disciplined by the trade agreements we have and what's allowed and what's not allowed. There was a dust-up about 6 or 8 months ago in the dairy sector, which I think is what you're referring to, Lori. And what we would say there is that that particular dispute had nothing to do with access to market between the countries. But there was an issue there, and we would encourage dairy farmers, if they want to negotiate greater access with Canada, that should be a focal point in the U.S. negotiations. But I'm always reticent to talk about softwood lumber or dairy, again, because I always feel I'm talking about the very smallest portion of the trade between our country. I don't wish to minimize what it means to the people affected. That's not my intention. But I do want us to keep it in perspective of this great economic relationship that we've achieved under the NAFTA.
I'm sure you're aware, and again, if you're just tuning in, my guest is Canadian Consul General Paul Connors. We're talking to him from his office in Minneapolis. He was recently in South Dakota meeting with Governor Dennis Dugard. And the news in South Dakota that is difficult to escape is the leak in the Keystone Pipeline. Let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned energy and our partnership with Canada regarding energy. Where do you want to begin with that conversation? What's the groundwork that we need to lay before we talk about what happens with Keystone XL and what happens with, you know, some of the environmental impact of tar sands?
Yeah, what I would say there, Lori, is that the United States produces an incredible amount of energy. You're an incredible producer of oil. Your oil production has spiked up in the last couple years, mainly because of Bakken, the technology that unlocked the reserves in your Bakken in Montana and North Dakota in particular. You've also had increases, I believe, in your production in the Gulf of Mexico. So you have fantastic energy production, including fantastic oil production in the United States. That fantastic production is about half of your consumption. It's about 9-10 million barrels a day that you produce, and that's about half of what you consume. The other half you import from other countries. We are pleased that Canada provides 40% of the crude oil that you import into this country, and other countries provide the other 60%. So it's a wonderful economic relationship, and the safest and securest way to transport oil, large volumes over long distance, is in pipelines versus other modes of transportation.
So with two leaks in South Dakota in as many years, right now many South Dakotans are calling me and saying it doesn't feel very safe. What do you think the challenges are going forward to make sure that it's safe? And let's talk a little bit about Canada's policy of sort of taking climate change into consideration when approving energy projects, which is not legislation or policy that happens in America.
Yeah, thank you. And I would like to segue into our climate change policy, Lori. Thank you very much for mentioning that. Look, on pipelines, I would say this. None of us ever want to see a pipeline leak, but pipelines do leak. So last week we had the leak on Thursday reported on the Keystone pipeline in Marshall County. I was on the phone. Canadian officials were on the phone. We spoke with the company. We spoke with U.S. federal officials, and we were speaking with South Dakotan officials. And on Friday, the governor and I discussed that as well. Anytime you have a leak, the top priority is public safety, and you want to minimize impacts to people and the environment. And what we were able to garner very quickly was that the spill had been contained and crews were on the ground and the cleanup was underway. Going forward, we're going to continue to stay in touch with South Dakota officials and federal officials in the company and monitor that situation. We love cars, but there are car accidents sometimes, you know, as well. But the bigger thing for us is we're going to be using oil for several decades to come. That said, Canada is very, very committed and convinced of the need to move to a low-carbon economy and to reduce our emissions of greenhouse gases, including CO2. You may be surprised to know that our largest oil-producing province, Alberta, has had a carbon tax on its oil production since 2007. The federal government in Canada, through our commitments on the Paris Climate Change Accord, we brought in a national carbon tax. That tax starts on January 1st, 2018, at $10 a ton. It'll go up $10 a ton for the next 4 years. Every year until it reaches $50 a ton, and then the policy will be revisited. That is just one of the policies we're doing. So we are going to continue to develop our resources in Canada and do it responsibly. We're going to keep working on reducing the environmental footprints from traditional fossil fuels such as crude oil and natural gas, but we're also going to continue the work to develop and deploy new and cleaner energies, and we're going to keep working on our Paris commitment to get our climate down. I'd like to thank you, Lori, for, in your preamble, pointing out that Canada is the only major supplier of crude oil to the United States that has put a carbon tax on its oil.
Does that have anything to do with the path, then, of the Keystone XL, the difference in policies and environmental protections in Canada versus the United States?
I'm sorry, Lori, I didn't follow that question. Do you want to come at me again?
I'm wondering, when you talk about the policies that are in place in Canada, and then we look at the path of the Keystone XL pipeline, you know, going through the United States in the way it does that impact, you know, the sort of planning of a project like that? I'm wondering.
Well, pipelines are planned by companies based on producers' need to get their oil to refineries where it's processed and turned into market. So the pipelines coming from Western Canada into the U.S. Midwest, mid-continent, and down to the Gulf Coast are developed by the private sector based on the needs of the market to get oil to the refineries. And then companies propose projects to regulators. The public policy role is for regulators to review the pipelines. So from the public, as the government of Canada, from the public policy perspective, what I would say, it's the role of our regulators to review pipeline proposals from private industry, determine if they're in the public interest, and to approve them or not.
Let's finish with just some general information about what people, you know, maybe in South Dakota who want to visit Canada or who want to think more other than, you know, energy and economics. So what do they need to know about, you know, travel and tourism and that kind of exchanges between South Dakota and Canada?
Well, there's great exchanges. I'm a perfect example of that, and I'm glad you circled back to that, Laurie. I did the All-American wife and three kids in the minivan trip across South Dakota in the summer of 2010. We drove the I-90 from east to west. We were going from Minnesota to Vancouver, British Columbia, ultimately. We had the pleasure of going across the I-90. We did the Corn Palace in Mitchell. We stopped in Pier. I hope I get some credit as a Canadian for saying Pier, because every being in my body wants to say Pierre, and I know you say Pier. We got on to Rapid City. We got to the Badlands. We saw lots of prairie dogs. We went to Wall's Drugstore. We didn't have the free ice water because my kids wanted Cokes. I made them have Diet Cokes. We got to Rapid City. We were going to spend a day at Mount Rushmore, but we got there. We just loved it so much. We saw a water park. We did an extra day, and then we decided to take a third day, and we went and saw the Crazy Horse Monument, and we did some more hiking. And then we got caught in the I-90 leaving town in a bunch of motorcycles, and my wife Googled it, and we were there the day before the beginning of the annual Sturgis motorcycle rally. So on the tourism front, I'm pleased to say that I'm one of the thousands of Canadians that come down and visit your beautiful state every year. And I had the pleasure in 2010 to really enjoy South Dakota. I got a little taste of it again last week, and I hope to be down soon. And as to South Dakotans going to Canada, we equally have lots of things we'd like to show our friends and neighbors. To the end of this year, I know there's not much time left. As part of our sesquicentennial, all our national parks are free this year. If you go on the Parks Canada website before you can go, you can get a free sticker. It's not available at the gate. You have to do it beforehand. So if any South Dakotans are heading to a national park in Canada before the end of the year, get your free pass online. And I guess the last thing I would do is point out that our loonie, which is our currency, is at 80 cents to the U.S. dollar, so our American friends would get good value for their dollar if they head north this year.
Canadian Consul General Paul Connors, thank you so much for being here. Please come back anytime.
Laurie, I look forward to being down in South Dakota many, many times during my tenure and to experience that great warmth and friendliness of South Dakotans again.